and so on and so on. Aaron cracks a joke about stealing me, and Hannah says, "No way, you can have my husband if you like, but hands off my housekeeper." And I don't know why, but it makes me angry. I want to tell them that they're a couple of hypocrites, that I bet they think they're so progressive, and I bet they vote liberal, and they sign all the petitions about healthcare and work conditions. But back inside their ivory towers, they make jokes about whether they can steal their friend's maid and shriek in mock outrage. "Not my maid! Have my husband instead." But then I remember that I'm not the maid. I'm not the housekeeper either. I'm just pretending. I don't know what's the matter with me. Hannah goes to fix up her makeup, and Aaron waits for her downstairs. When I walk past with the tray of glasses and the empty champagne bottle, I say something like, "Have a good evening." She squints at me like she's nearsighted and has forgotten her glasses. It makes my hairline tingle. She narrows her eyes at me and tilts her head. "Do I know you?" "I don't think so, ma'am," I say, but something about her eyes. It tugs at something on the edge of my brain. Aaron. And then it comes to me. I can't believe I didn't recognize her sooner. Aaron. The Johnson girls, Aaron and her sister Bella. Aaron and I were in the same year at school before we moved away. "Where did you work before? Maybe that's where I know you from." I almost blurted out, "I worked for the Van Kemps for years." But I catch myself just in time because what if she knows the Van Kemps? Spent the last 10 Christmases at their house? Had met the real Louise Martin? All she'd have to do is make a call on the way out. "Darling, remind me. That housekeeper of yours, you had her for years." "Yes, Louise, that's it. Did she have big boobs?" "Dr. and Mrs. Lowe," I reply, my chin lifted in defiance. "A very nice family." She nods slowly, her eyes still narrowed, and I can smell a whiff of stale alcohol emanating from her. But it's in her eyes. She's going to figure it out. I can see her little brain working. Tick, tick, tick. I'm getting nervous. She's just staring at me, and my mouth is set so tight it's making my lips tremble. She's going to say it. "Oh, I know. Claire Peterson. That's it. Groton, freshman. Remember me? Erin Johnson?" If I weren't carrying the tray, I'd grab her right now. I would put my hand behind her long neck and shove her into the open elevator. I would press the button for the basement before she'd have the time to fight me off. I can see myself doing it. I'm considering it. There's a boiler room downstairs next to the laundry. It has a lock, and I know where the key is. I could keep her in there. I could tie her up. Leave her down there until I have what I came for and all this is over. She's still thinking about it, tilting her head this way and that, when Hannah arrives and pulls her by the sleeve. "Come on, we'll be late." And that's enough to make Aaron's mind move on to the next thing, like a goldfish. Before they walk out, Hannah whispers in my ear, "I probably don't need to say this, but please don't let anyone in." "Of course." I can hear them all the way down the street as I stand at the door, which I do not close until they're out of earshot, in case Aaron says something about me. Chapter 19. Philippa Davenport and I had been best friends since third grade. We'd sit on her pink satin bedspread and do each other's nails and listen to Mariah Carey on repeat. She had a cook called Anna who would bring us crepes with Nutella and ice cream and slices of strawberry cheesecake. We were in love with Justin Timberlake and Harry Potter, and we spent countless hours planning our weddings in minute details, from tiaras to profiterole cakes. We were obsessed with profiterole cakes. Philippa's 14th birthday party was to be held at the Pierre Hotel, in a sumptuous grand circular ballroom. The theme for the party was the debutante ball, which to us was the most exciting thing in the world. The real debutante ball is an invitation-only formal affair where young ladies of distinction from upper-class families are presented to high society. We were all such young ladies of distinction, and the real ball was still at least 3 years away for us. But this was the next best thing. Philippa and I prepared for it for months. We talked nonstop about what we would wear, even though it was a given that every girl would wear more or less the same thing, a white satin gown and matching gloves that went all the way past our elbows. Hannah had been and gone from our lives by then. There had been some confusion as to why, having made such a fuss of coming to New York, she'd only stayed for a week before begging to be sent home. But I wasn't interested. She was a blip on our landscape, a kink in our road. As far as I was concerned, she may as well not have existed at all. The adults were also invited, but at the last minute, my father didn't come. Something about him not feeling well, and I was vaguely aware of something going on at home. Hushed voices behind closed doors, my mother looking teary, my father shaking his head a lot. My mother and I walked in the gorgeous room lit by enormous chandeliers, like a rain of crystal drops cascading from ornate glass frames, and adorned by a series of painted angelic scenes in gilded frames, as exquisite as if Raphael had descended from the heavens to paint them all himself. The room was enchanting, and the most glamorous room I'd ever stepped in. My mother joined the adults for cocktails while I went searching for Philippa. There was a photo to be taken of all of us girls, and I was instructed to join the others. I saw them giggling and jostling each other as the photographer and Philippa's mother organized everyone. I had never felt so beautiful in my life. In my white dress like a soft cloud, and my blonde hair in soft curls, held up with diamante combs. When I think about that day, I try to stop there, before the titters of laughter that had begun farther down the line reached me, before I leaned forward into the closed group of girls and asked, smiling, already laughing in anticipation, what the joke was all about, before I caught sight of Philippa, hurriedly scrunching a piece of paper and shoving it into her tiny white purse. Something about the way they were laughing, with their gloved fingers almost touching their lips, the glances they were throwing at each other but not at me, made me pause. "What is it?" I asked again, this time directly to her. She didn't answer. Something wasn't right. My heart beat too hard in my throat as I snatched Philippa's bag from her and grabbed the crumpled paper from it. "Hey!" she shouted. I dropped her bag to the floor and a Tampax rolled out onto the carpet and came to a stop against my toe. Just like that, everyone was quiet. They all watched me as I smoothed out the creases from the page. It was an article torn out of some shitty tabloid. Wilson versus Peterson. Did he or didn't he? It took me a moment to understand why I was looking at a photo of my father. It was a headshot, one I'd seen before in his firm, framed on the wall of the lobby. Did he or didn't he what? I turned around, away from their prying eyes and stifled giggles, and I read on about Hannah Wilson's claim that my father had tried to rape her in our home, repeatedly, that he had touched her. And it got so bad that the family had to send her back. The Wilsons were suing for millions. The room was spinning. It was no longer glamorous and sumptuous. It was grotesque. Some cheap set in a suburban fair where the music was too loud and the people waltzing looked like demented clowns. They were laughing again now that someone had picked up Philippa's fucking Tampax, and no one needed to be embarrassed by that anymore. There was a tug at my elbow, but I couldn't move. I couldn't read either because the article was shaking too violently in my hand. Claire, honey. I turned around slowly to look at my mother. She was white as a sheet, her mouth set into a tight line. Come on, honey, let's go home. But I was trapped on the merry-go-round, with the room still spinning and the orchestra still playing and the clowns still dancing and the noise of laughing growing louder and louder around me. I dropped the newspaper cutout and let myself be dragged away, hot tears stinging my eyes and shame burning my face. Funny, I'd forgotten Aaron Johnson was there that day, laughing at my humiliation right in my face. I'm pacing around the kitchen, biting the skin around my nail, with Mia looking at me from her chair. I've screwed up. I've been complacent, enjoying seeing Hannah miserable. I've wasted so much time, and now I'm about to be caught. What if Aaron asks Hannah about me? What if Hannah tells her that I worked for the Van Kemps and Aaron knows them? What if it comes back to her, just like it did with me? Surely not. She couldn't possibly associate me now. The Carter's overweight, plain-looking, boring housekeeper, with someone she briefly went to school with 10 years ago. I don't even look like myself. And even if I did, it's not enough to jump to conclusions, surely. But none of that makes me feel better. It's clear to me that the only solution is to get Aaron away from Hannah. I grab my cell and call Dominic. He's in a bar. He can't hear me properly, and he has to go outside. I wait, trying to come up with the right words. When he comes back on the line, I can hear traffic in the background. Hey, stranger, he says. Dominic has sent me 2 texts since we last saw each other. I didn't respond to the first because I didn't know what to say. Then I made vague promises to catch up soon in response to the second. I tell him I was thinking about him, especially about the other night. He laughs. That's nice, he says. I think about that a lot, too. Where are you? He asks. We could catch up if you like. Baby, I want to, but I can't. I have to be somewhere. I'm sorry, I miss you. I cringe. Is that too much? Too soon? But then he says he misses me, and there's a smile in his voice. I have a favor to ask, I blurt. Okay, what is it? It's a silly thing, but bear with me, okay?
Sure, hit me with it.
Do you have a press pass? Like if you wanted to get into a charity function?
Invite only, lots of money. Could you do it?
It doesn't work like that. You get your credentials on a case-by-case basis, but yeah, I have a couple of passes. I can usually get in wherever I need to.
Do you think you could get a pass for the children's garden ball? I ask quickly.
The children's garden ball? That's on tonight.
I know.
Geez, babe, I don't know. It might be too late. Why? You want to go?
No, not me. But could you try? Please? I sound all wrong, so I give a little chuckle. Then I say, my friend and I have this running bet. We try to get the worst possible photo of each other, and at the end of the month, our friends vote on who really is the worst. It's a social media thing. Celebrities are doing it too. Anyway, she won last month, and you should see the photo she took of me. I laugh. On second thought, you shouldn't. Too embarrassing.
And now I just found out she's going to the garden ball tonight and getting a picture of her there doing something silly, like picking her nose or whatever, would be perfect. It would be a hoot. This has to be the longest shot since man decided to fly to the moon. I sound like a teenager telling her boyfriend about games I play with my girlfriends. Or it's worse than that. I sound like this is the most important thing in my life, getting an embarrassing photo of my friend so I can win the monthly bet. "Those tickets are super expensive," he says. "Who's your friend?"
"Hannah Carter. You know her?"
"No. Should I?"
"No, not at all.
But you could get in, right? As a photographer with your pass, could you follow her around? Try and get the worst possible photo? You'd have to do it undercover like James Bond." He laughs. "I don't know, Claire. I've got a night off. I'm here with the guys. I don't even know what she looks like."
"I'll text you a photo."
But Mia begins to cry. She has dropped her stuffed tiger onto the floor. I pick it up and brush it off, hand it back to her, and talk to her softly until she's happy again.
"Who's this?"
Dominic asks. I sigh. "It's my friend's baby. That's why I can't come and see you tonight."
"You're the babysitter?"
"Just doing a favor for my friend so she can go to work. She's just lost her husband, and I'm helping get her back on her feet." I feel bad lying, which is an odd feeling. But now Dominic wants to know all about Mia, how old she is and what she's like. Turns out that Dominic has a niece. She's almost a year old now. His sister is on her own, too. The father left.
"That's tough," I say.
"Sure is, and I'm sorry to hear about your friend's husband. That's much worse. You should get your other friend to help out, the one who can afford a ticket to the garden ball."
"It's funny you should say that," I say, "because while my friend never asked her to help, they do know each other. And my other friend, the one going to the garden ball, she's got a lot of money, but she doesn't like to part with it much, I noticed."
"Maybe you should get new friends," he says.
"Maybe I should." In the end, he makes no promises, but he lets me text a photo of Hannah. I send him one from her Instagram profile, a selfie from her honeymoon in Paris. Chapter 20. When Hannah comes downstairs the next morning, she looks terrible, like she's aged 10 years overnight. Her eyes are red-rimmed and puffy from crying. She's got a jacket on, and she's putting Mia in the stroller.
"You okay?"
I ask.
"No, not really. Can you help me out here?"
She's trying to shove a beanie on Mia's little head, but Mia is fighting her off. I step in and take it from her. I pretend not to notice that her hands are shaking. I gently pull the beanie down low over Mia's ears and tuck the blanket around her.
"Can you come with me?"
Hannah asks quickly, putting her large sunglasses on.
"I'll pay extra,"
she whispers. Then she blushes.
"Sorry, what a thing to say. I make it sound like I'll pay extra if you'll be my friend."
She laughs wryly.
"I sure could use one."
I could say no. I have things to do. I'm incredibly busy. But I need to finish what I started. I need to make sure she stays away from Erin. "Sure, I'll come with you." "Where are we going?" I ask. As if there's nothing wrong with her. As if she's not a complete mess. She squeezes my hand.
"You know that stupid mother's group?" "No, maybe you don't. I can't remember if I mentioned it. Anyway, I'm meeting with them now if I can ever get out of the fucking house. Sorry. Over in the park. I'm already late."
"Okay, can I ask, why do you want me to come with you?"
"Because I need moral support. I know, don't say it. I'm a loser. Anyone who needs moral support to go to a mother's group up the street is a loser. I just want to check them out. If it's weird, I'll leave. We can walk around the park instead."
She laughs almost maniacally.
Hannah?
Yes, Louise?
Maybe you should stay home.
She quickly wipes her cheeks with both hands.
It's not an option, unfortunately.
And the way she glances behind her makes me think it has to do with Harvey, even though he's gone to work already. I suspect he wants her to go. I nod. Okay, I'll get my jacket.
We barely speak on the way, other than me asking again if she's all right, and her shaking her head. Her eyes are darting everywhere, and I wonder if she's looking for Diane.
We walk to the gates of the Billy Johnson playground.
Harvey is pushing me to join this group, she says,
just as I suspected.
These people, they're Aaron's friends.
She doesn't say Aaron's name as much as she spits it out.
She wipes her cheek again with the back of her hand.
Fucking Aaron, she mutters.
What happened? I ask. But then we see them in the distance, a group of women in full workout gear, strollers in their midst, the three-wheel type people jog with. Some women are stretching their legs, others are doing squats.
Shit, Hannah mutters.
And I don't think it's just because she's dressed in jeans and a loose top. These women look fabulous. These women with their perfect physiques and their pretty smiles, they look happy. They look like they belong. I bet most of them have jobs, too, important jobs, like Serena. Partners in law firms or business owners or financial managers. It occurs to me that Hannah really does feel insecure in this world, and it's not just an act.
She guides me by the elbow, dragging me along as we take a sharp left.
I need to sit down, she says.
Okay. We sit on the first bench we spot, overlooking the lake.
Before I begin, if you see anyone with the camera pointed at us, let me know, please, okay?
Of course.
Aaron called this morning,
she blurts. Mia stirs and I rock the stroller gently. And?
There's a photo of me circulating on Instagram.
I stop moving. Okay, how bad is it? She shakes her head.
I don't know. At first I thought not that bad. But the way Harvey reacted, you'd think I'd gotten completely blind drunk, taken my clothes off, and set the place on fire.
I frown. But you didn't.
God, no. It's a photo of me smoking a cigarette.
I don't understand.
She takes a shaky breath.
Last night at the gala, after dinner, Aaron and I went back outside. She asked me for a cigarette, and yes, before you ask, she knows I started smoking again. But Harvey doesn't know. I mean, he does now, obviously.
She snorts.
We found a quiet corner. Somebody took a photo and put it on social media.
And that's it?
Hello, Mrs. Harvey Carter, smoking behind the bike shed at the annual ball for children's cancer.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, shit.
She presses her hand hard between her eyes. How did Aaron take it, being in the photo?
That's the thing. She's not in the photo. It's just me. She got cropped out. And before you ask, we don't know who took it. But I have a very good idea.
She gives a wry laugh. With a trembling hand, she fishes around her bag and pulls out her cell.
Look.
She shoves the screen under my nose. I've already seen it, obviously, since I'm the one who put it up. I didn't even know Dominic had been to the gala until he texted the photo of Hannah and Aaron smoking. He sent it with a text. I hope you win your bet. Go get some new friends. I wasn't expecting him to send anything. It was such a stupid lie, a last-minute desperate attempt to rope him in,
just so I can make Hannah look bad. What are the odds that he'd get a photo?
And I didn't think he'd really believe it.
My friend and I have this bet.
When he texted it to me at 11 p.m. last night, my first thought was, I must introduce Dominic to April. Because honestly, those two are the most gullible people I know, and they are made for each other. Then I thought, wait, I like this guy.
Sorry, April.
Still, I'm going to have to teach them both about trust and common sense. He sent another one, too, of Hannah laughing at an odd angle that made her face look like a demented rabbit. Cute, funny. Not what I was after, though. Not ugly enough or embarrassing enough. But the smoking one? Honestly, I was astonished that those women would even do such a thing at that event. I cropped Erin out of the shot, not because I wanted to protect her from the fallout, but because I wanted Hannah to suspect her of being in on it. I created a brand new fake Instagram account, then put a bunch of hashtags and tagged all the right people, including Erin. Within minutes, the post had 25 likes, and half an hour later, it had over 30 comments. Looking at it now, it has over 400 likes and is the top post on the hashtag feed, hashtag Children's Garden Ball. I turned to stare at Hannah. She's biting her fingernails and shaking like a drug addict. You can barely see your face, I say. No one would know it's you. I point to the photo where she's bent down, the cigarette in her mouth, leaning into the lighter that Erin is holding. The only part of Erin you can see is her hand. Hannah is squinting and the flame is throwing shadows on her face. She looks, I don't know, nasty, vicious.
Are you fucking kidding me? She hisses. They've got my name all over it.
I go back to the screen and read through the hashtags, which, obviously, I know by heart. Hashtag Mrs. Hannah Carter. Hashtag Just Say No. Hashtag There Goes the Neighborhood. Hashtag Hypocrite Much. Hashtag Hello, Mrs. Carter. Hashtag Where Did He Find Her? Hashtag Mrs. Harvey Carter. Hashtag Hannah Wilson, Remember Her? Hashtag Too Much Money. Hashtag Who Cares About the Kids? Hashtag go back where you came from. Hashtag NQOCD.
That one I had to look up, she says, tapping on the screen. Turns out NQOCD stands for Not Quite Our Class, Darling. Nice, isn't it? Then there's the caption.
She taps the screen with her finger, and it makes the image zoom right in. Then she tries to zoom it out with two fingers, but she's making it worse, so that now the screen is filled with her big puckered lips around a giant cigarette. I take the phone away from her and zoom it back out. Then I pretend to squint at the caption. You can't put a bitch in a dress and call it a decent person.
Ouch,
I say. Then I read the various comments below.
Who is this? WTF. Can someone tell this moron smoking gives you cancer? Did she even give any money to the cause? What an idiot. Stupid bitch. I think it's Diane, Hannah says.
I nod, tapping around the screen. Okay, so the poster is some stupid username and it's their one and only post. She must have created it last night. I keep staring at it like I'm deep in concentration.
But how the hell did she do it? Surely she wasn't at the fundraiser. Didn't you say the tickets were $1,000 each? Can Diane afford that sort of money?
She shakes her head.
I doubt it. And no, of course I didn't see her. I would have come straight home if I had.
Did you see anyone who could have taken the shot?
We were only 100 feet from the marquee. We weren't even hiding exactly, just trying to be discreet. We walked away toward a darker corner and sat down on the first bench we came across, along the path and under a tree. I don't remember anyone else nearby, There were photographers, as there would be at that sort of glittery event, but they were nowhere near us. I just don't know. I just had a massive fight with Harvey about exactly that. I said to him, I'm not punching anyone or raving like a lunatic. I'm smoking a cigarette, for Christ's sake. I told him he was more upset about the fucking post than about the fact that his wife has a stalker. Then he started yelling, a stalker? Oh, that's right. I forgot. It's Diane who took the photo. Did she put the fucking cigarette in your mouth, too?
She winces, rubs a spot along her arm. I nod sagely, an expression of concern on my face. But really inside, I'm having a party. This fight with Harvey is just an added bonus. So how did Erin know about this? I ask.
She's tagged in it.
Diane tagged her?
Yes.
She waits a beat, then says,
you don't think it's Diane?
Put it this way, if it really was Diane, would she have cropped Erin out of the shot? And would Diane even know how to do that? Did she know you were going? I shake my head. I don't know. Maybe someone saw you two smoking and took a photo, uploaded it. The end.
Are you even concentrating here? Because as you yourself pointed out, this is a brand new account created for this one post. This isn't some lucky pot shot at me. This is a deliberate attempt to humiliate me, all this shit about Mrs. Harvey Carter. Not quite our class, darling. What the fuck? And if it isn't Diane, then who? I can't think of anyone.
She closes her eyes but doesn't speak. I keep going. It does seem like some kind of setup, don't you think? Let's look at this for a moment. Erin knows you're going. She knows Harvey isn't since she took his ticket. She's the first person to tell you about it. And of course she's not in the photo. Very convenient. We sit in silence for a moment, then I try again. Why are you so certain this is Diane? She closes her eyes briefly.
I want to tell you something I haven't told anyone since I've moved here. But I have to know I can trust you.
I'm impressed that Hannah can say things like that with a straight face. Of course, I say.
There's a tag on that post. Hannah Wilson. Remember her? That's what it says. That's my maiden name.
Okay.
Oh, God. This is so complicated. You see, I never told Harvey about this. I don't know why. I just didn't. And then it was too late. And his mother hates me. So that sure doesn't help. I told you I was pregnant before we were married. Well, she thinks I did that on purpose to ensnare her son.
Hannah, I have no idea what you're talking about here. Start at the beginning. Hannah Wilson, your maiden name. I've been gently rocking Mia, and I get up to make sure she's still in the shade. Behind me, Hannah slides across the bench to where I was sitting.
I'll do it, she says.
She takes hold of the handle and starts to rock the stroller. I want to tell her she's doing it too fast. I want to ask her to be more gentle, but I don't. There's no way I'm going to interrupt her now. I just walk to the other side of the bench, sit down, and adjust my sunglasses. Let's hear your version of events, Hannah Wilson. I'm all ears. Chapter 21.
When I'm asked how I came to be a florist, she begins, I usually say that it was a simple, accidental, unfortunate path.
I have to stop my eyes from rolling around inside my head. I don't think I could handle another lecture on tulips right now.
High school diploma at 18, she continues, then straight to an apprenticeship. After which I found a job in a shop in Toronto. But you see, and no one knows this about me, not even Harvey, I desperately wanted to be an artist. I used to draw all the time. I thought I could study at art school. My parents own a small farm, and they assumed I'd work with them after I graduated. I managed to convince them to let me have the summer off first. I wanted to travel, see a bit of the world, and most of all, I wanted to see the famous works of art. But to do that, I needed a job. And the only job I'd ever had, other than on the farm, was babysitting after school. My mother had a nephew who had married a New Yorker. She mentioned to her I was looking for a job babysitting somewhere abroad. I don't know how they did it exactly, but next thing I knew, I was offered a job as a nanny for the month of August with a family in Manhattan. They needed help looking after their 9-year-old son and would provide a place to live, as well as a small wage. She stops talking for a moment, and it's unbearable. But I don't prompt her. I wait patiently, my heart thumping in my chest, until finally, after an eternity or two, she resumes.
The family was lovely at first. They lived around the corner from here on Park Avenue, in an enormous apartment on 2 levels. I'd never seen anything like it. The mother was very kind.
And for a second there, I want to punch her. Don't talk about my mother. She continues.
The father was a short, round-faced, balding man who was always reaching for his wife's hand.
Just like Harvey.
The boy, John, was sweet and very good-looking for a child his age, with dark curly hair, a thin, pale face, and blue eyes. He was a lovely boy, easy to get along with, eager to please. But I was too young, too immature, too shy. Everything overwhelmed me, the noise, the crowds, the air so thick and sticky I could barely breathe. I was afraid of leaving the apartment, terrified that I would get lost, that I wouldn't know how to catch the subway or which bus to take. It just seemed easier to put it off, this great adventure, until I found my feet. Maybe even the next day, or at most the next week.
She rubs her hand on her forehead like she's got a headache.
I woke up one night, not long after I'd arrived. It was dark, pitch black even. The covers had slipped off me, or that's what I thought. And my nightdress was pulled up to the top of my thighs, high enough to reveal the beginnings of my pubic hair. Then I heard it. The sound he made, a quick intake of breath, over and over. It was him, the dad, sitting on a chair by the bed, so close I could have touched him. I was so shy and inexperienced, I didn't know what he was doing. I thought maybe I was needed, my mother's instructions echoing in my head. Be polite, always say please and thank you. I won't have a daughter of mine be ungrateful or rude to her bosses.
She laughs bitterly.
I quickly pulled my nightdress down and swung my legs out of the bed. I was about to ask what was going on when he reached across and lifted my nightdress again, kept it up with one hand so that I remained exposed while he finished masturbating. It only took a few seconds. But instead of fighting him off, I sat there frozen, my face burning. I couldn't move. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't even comprehend the situation I was in. Then he patted my knee and left. I lay down again, crying with shame. The next day at breakfast, she asked if I was all right. He was there too. He glared at me, then in a loud voice he said, "Are you not very happy today, Hannah?"
She stops speaking, then turns to me and says,
"You okay?"
I snap my head up. "Sure, why?"
"You just made a funny noise, that's all."
"I'm okay, keep going."
To this day, I don't know why I didn't say anything. Only that I was paralyzed by shyness and by the parental instructions I'd always heard, that the adults were in charge, that you should always answer when spoken to. My room didn't have a lock on the door, and it happened again 2 days later, and then the night after that. That time I cried. I told him to leave. I said I'd tell his wife. He said that no one would believe me. I was here without a proper visa. I was working illegally. Did I know what that meant? It meant that if the authorities found out, I would go to jail. The wife would ask me, her forehead all scrunched up in worry, "Are you sure you're all right, Hannah? Is there anything we can do?" I'd just shake my head. "No, nothing, thank you." But I just wanted to vomit all the time. In the end, she couldn't bear it anymore, this sad and surly girl that even her little boy, who liked everybody, seemed to recoil from. Eventually, I told her I wanted to go home. She called my mother, and 2 days later, he drove me to the airport. He patted me on the knee, said that they would miss me, and wished me luck.
She stops there, like she's lost in her thought. My leg is shaking, and I have to press my hand down on it to make it stop.
"I cried when I saw my mother," she says. "I told her about the father's nightly visits."
She sighs, picks at the skin around her thumbnail.
"She told my father. I was summoned to the living room. It was like someone had died. They were both sitting on the sofa, my mother clutching a handkerchief. My father wanted to know everything. I told him my sordid tale once more, looking at the floor. He was furious. I'd never seen him like this. I begged him not to say anything, not to do anything, to let it be. It was over. What was the point in getting upset? But he was so angry, understandably. He said he didn't care how fucking rich and uppity these people were. That we may be the Wilsons from Ontario, simple farming folk, but we were honest, hard-working folks, and we would not be used and discarded just because they had so much money. Because that's what it came down to in the end. If his daughter had been perved upon by a poor old creep with no fortune to his name, he wouldn't have made a fuss. He might even have told me not to get so worked up over nothing. But these were very rich people. And to this day, I swear I don't know if he saw an opportunity or if he genuinely thought that my honor was priceless. My dad has a gambling problem. He's always looking for an angle. He calls me asking for money all the time. He wants me to ask Harvey for thousands of dollars, but I won't do it. I just tell my dad that Harvey says no, and that's that.
I'm surprised that she would even admit to that. Then it occurs to me she might have known I was listening in on the conversation, and she's weaving it in as part of her narrative.
"A lawyer showed up," she continues. "I repeated my story again for a third time. I was terrified of the consequences, but I couldn't resist the power of my father's determination. He'd put forms in front of me. 'Sign here,' he'd bark, 'and here, and here.' We'd go over my story again and again, and each time he'd ask, 'Did he touch you? You know, on your private parts?' And I would die right there of humiliation. Eventually, they filed a complaint in civil court in New York. It was my word against theirs, essentially. By then, the press was covering the story, and for a time, they were on my side. We went back to New York a few times, the three of us holed up in one room in a cheap hotel, my father pacing back and forth on the brown carpet. There were depositions and filings, and the more they fought back, the harder my father went. We were asking for $10 million in compensation, but there was an older sister who had been away that summer. I only met her once, very briefly. By now, she'd told everyone that I'd told her I'd planned the whole thing, that I was after their money, and the father had never done anything to me. As if. But then the father died of a heart attack.
And that was that. Case closed.
Case closed? In your dreams, Hannah Carter, nay Wilson. Case not closed, not by a long shot.
My father didn't say a single word all the way home, but his knuckles were white on the steering wheel. My mother looked out the window. I cried in the back seat. When we arrived back home, my father wouldn't even look at me. He went to get changed into his overalls while my mother took off her gloves in our small living room and turned to me, glaring, and said, "Tell me now, Hannah, did you make it all up?" And just like that, my parents distanced themselves from the debacle they had helped create at my expense. My mother pursed her lips for at least a year whenever she saw me, like it had all been my fault. If I tried to defend myself, "But I never wanted this," she would just shake her head. "Let's not speak about this anymore." My father barely said a word to me, and when he did, it was usually to tell me that I'd broken my mother's heart. So when the florist in town advertised for an intern, I applied, because I couldn't wait to get out of there. If none of that had happened, I would have done what my parents expected of me. I would have worked with them on the farm, married a local guy, and taken over when they retired. So that's how I became a florist. And you know my biggest regret? She laughs wryly. I never went to a single museum. I didn't even try to become an artist. I just gave up.
She wipes her cheeks with both hands. I have to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. I don't wait for an answer. I run over to the restrooms by the zoo and lock myself inside. I only just make it before I throw up.
You okay?
She asks, frowning when I return. It's all I can do not to punch her in the face, because she is the greatest liar I've ever met. She knows very well that's not what happened, and I don't just mean her justifications for her actions, her claims that my father really did those things to her. I expect nothing less from her, but there's something about the way she told the story. There are too many lies. Too many things that don't add up. I nod. I have a sensitive stomach. Nothing to worry about. Keep going.
Do you remember that day Diane came to the house? The day she went crazy?
She asks. How could I forget?
She said I wasn't who I said I was. Clearly, she found out about Hannah Wilson. She came over to threaten me. That's why I didn't want to tell Harvey about her coming over, you understand?
It takes a moment for it to sink in. Hannah thought Diane's big crazy outburst was about her. She believes Diane was threatening to expose her past. I know who she really is. She's a liar. She's evil. She had no idea Diane was talking about me. I think back over what she said right afterwards.
I'd like to give you a raise since you double as a bodyguard.
That was a bribe, pure and simple.
Don't tell my husband.
Have you told him now? I ask. She shoots me a small smile, then opens her lips as if to say something. She blinks, shakes her head imperceptibly.
Not yet,
she says and quickly adds.
But I will. I have to. I just want to get over this latest drama first.
She puts her hand on her forehead and stays like that a while. The award for best actress in a real-life drama goes to...
The part that really worries me, Louise, is that I feel like I'm losing my grip on reality. I wonder if that's why Mia is always upset when I'm around.
She's not always upset, I say.
With me, she is. Babies, children, they're attuned to their mothers. I worry sometimes I'm doing something wrong with Mia, something that will matter later.
I nod. When I lost my mother. But then I immediately stop talking.
Oh, Louise, I thought your mom was okay. I thought she'd recovered after the treatment. Did something happen?
Oh, yeah, I mean when I almost lost my mother. I thought she was going to die. I told you that, didn't I? That's why I had to take time off work and look after her.
Of course, I remember. But she's okay now, isn't she?
Yeah, she's good.
Okay, good to know. You had me worried for a moment.
She rummages through her bag for something and pulls out her phone.
We should go,
she says, still not looking at me, and I think I detect a blush on her neck. Sure, you okay?
Yes, I am now.
She turns to face me. I study her face, but she seems normal again.
Thank you for listening.
You're welcome, but I'm still not sold on the Diane angle. Just saying, if I were you, I'd keep Erin at arm's length for a while. Something's not right about that woman. She stands up, hoists her bag over her shoulder, and adjusts her sunglasses.
That's funny. She said the same about you.
Chapter 22. Back home, Hannah announces she'll put a cheese platter together for us, which is fine with me. I'm always nervous around mealtimes, especially if Hannah is hovering nearby. So if she wants to do it, I'm not going to stop her. I still have leftovers from a Greek salad I bought the day before, so I pull that out of the refrigerator. It's in a bowl because I'm very careful not to keep the original packages. They get immediately thrown in the trash, even the recyclable plastic ones. I put them in a paper bag and take them out to the trash in the street. I serve the Greek salad and put out some saltines to go with it as she pulls out a bottle of Shiraz.
I never drink at lunchtime, but today I'm making an exception. You want to join me?
I think it's an excellent idea. I pull out two glasses for us.
Don't tell Harvey I didn't go to the mother's group, please.
Don't tell Harvey. Don't tell Harvey.
I won't.
We eat silently for a moment. Can I ask, why did you fire Diane? I ask without looking at her, like I'm just making idle conversation.
Because she threw out my mug from Canada, she says.
I look up then. She threw out your mug from Canada, I repeat, to make sure I heard her right. She sighs.
It was more than that, of course. Diane never liked me. She was always comparing me with Serena.
Ah.
And maybe that's why I let her go, because I'm insecure.
There, I've said it.
I let Diane go because she made me feel bad about myself.
Bad how?
Oh, God, so many things. One time Patsy was here and Diane told her in front of me that I'd been asking people how much things cost, and she didn't think it was appropriate.
She pops a piece of cheese into her mouth.
Seriously?
Uh-huh. Patsy wanted to know what I'd asked, and to whom. I had to explain it wasn't like that. It was because Erin was here. I don't remember the occasion. I was looking at her ring. Beautiful. Diamonds and rubies. I chided her because I thought she must have a new man in her life. She said, no, it's a present to myself. That's what she said. I was ogling the ring and blurted out something like, that must have set you back a few bucks. Behind me, Diane made some tut-tut sound. Then she leaned over and whispered, Mrs. Carter, people in your position don't comment about what things cost.
In front of Erin. I was so embarrassed.
I burst out laughing, which threatens to turn into hysterics. Maybe it's the shock of the day, having to listen to her endless lies, that's made me tied up in knots. But I am laughing so much I'm crying, and now Hannah is looking at me like there's something wrong with me. I'm so sorry, I say finally, getting my breath back. It's just so outrageous. It's funny. She makes a face, but then she smiles. Don't stop now, I say, filling up her glass. Tell me more.
Well, I would move something. For instance, you see how the spices are lined up over there on the shelf? One time I put them all near the stove and moved the coffee machine over here, and all those white cups and saucers from over there. I put them where the spices used to be. The next day, she'd put everything back the way it was before I changed it.
Really?
Really. This was the kind of game Diane liked to play, except I didn't know what the rules were. As far as I could tell, it went like this. I put something somewhere, she moves it back. I know the kitchen was her domain, but I live here too. I just like to stand here in the morning and have my coffee. And I just put the cups in the coffee machine within reach. That was all. She walked in that morning, greeted me, and I asked her, "Did you move the spices back and the coffee machine?" And you know what she said?
I shake my head. What did she say?
She put on her stupid apron and she said, "Mrs. Carter always liked it this way, with the cups over there and the spices here." She meant Serena, of course.
I snort, but I'm eating and an olive pops out of my mouth and bounces on the table. I grab it and throw it in the sink.
"I am Mrs. Carter," I told her.
What did she say?
She apologized.
Hannah imitates Diane's voice. "Sorry, Mrs. Carter. I mean the first Mrs. Carter."
I told her, "Yes, I know what you meant." But I thought she meant the real Mrs. Carter. The one who truly belongs here in this beautiful home. The one who drinks her morning coffee out of fine white china, just like Harvey. The one who looks like she's stepped off a Vogue cover instead of, well, me. Do I look like I belong here? Don't answer that. I'm working on it. And the funny thing is that I tried so hard to get along with her. I even asked her in the beginning to call me by my first name. "Call me Hannah," I said, back when I thought we could get along. One time I helped load up the dishwasher and she complained to Harvey that it wasn't appropriate. And it made her uncomfortable.
"You can do my job if it makes you feel better," I say. She smiles.
So, as you can imagine, Diane never did call me by my first name. Instead, she seized every opportunity to make me feel inadequate. She told me once she'd read an article about how breastfed children are better at math. Would I like to see it? Even though she knew very well I hadn't been able to breastfeed. I'd love to breastfeed, but I can't. I have to rely on formula instead, as you know.
"That's not nice," I say, but all the while I'm liking this Diane more and more.
I clearly misjudged her.
"No, it's not, and this is from someone who, as far as I know, has not had children. Another time I put sunflowers in the hallway, and she came to me and she said, 'The first Mrs. Carter always puts white roses on the console table. I thought you'd want to know.' Well, you thought wrong."
"Are you serious? Again with the first Mrs. Carter?"
"Yes. I told her I was a florist before I came here, and she said, 'Oh, really? How terribly interesting.' Like it really wasn't."
I really can't blame Diane on that one, but still, I make the right noises like I'm outraged on her behalf.
"But the way she looked at me after that," Hannah resumes, "I knew I'd screwed up. I'd just slid a few rungs beneath her on the ladder of respectability. I was a merchant now, not a proper upper-class wife. I may have scored a big fish and married above my station, but I was only one divorce decree away from yelling out prices at the wholesale market."
"Did you do that? Yell out prices at the wholesale market?"
"Well, no. It's a figure of speech. But that day, when she moved all those things around again, I went to get my favorite mug."
"Ah, the famous mug from Canada."
"Exactly. It had a picture of a maple leaf, very tacky, and the words, 'I heart Canada and your ass too,' plastered all over it. It was a silly thing, but it was a going away present from my friend Lucy. And I was standing there looking for it, and I said to her, 'Do you know where it is?' And she said, 'No, no idea.' I looked for it everywhere, in every cupboard, everywhere. I was getting more and more frantic, and she was watching me like I was unstable, which I probably was. I found it in the end. You know where?
Where?
In the trash, broken in pieces.
Seriously?
She said she didn't know.
I didn't believe her, I said. We're done here. I think you should go. I don't think we're a good fit, you and me. I even said, maybe you should talk to Serena and see if she has a position for you. I think you'll be a lot happier.
I thought Serena lived in London now, I say, like it's no big deal.
She colors a little, unexpectedly.
She does. I was just making a point. I was just sick of hearing about fucking Serena. Even Harvey